to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, July 2nd, 2020. A group of South Sudanese women activists are calling on President Salva Kiir to respect the terms of the 2018 peace agreement.
We need to continue raising our voices and let them put in consideration that this space, we are not going to leave it like that. They have to call out the rest of the people who have seated in our space, and the women must be there.
And Sudan arrests 122 people trying to cross the border illegally.
Our joint security forces managed to arrest these groups after long monitoring in Kapkabiya, Serif Umra, Zalinje, and Kulbus. All of them will undergo serious legal procedures.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A group of South Sudanese women activists say President Salva Kiir and other peace partners in the Transitional Government of National Unity have violated a provision of the 2018 peace agreement. The chairperson of the South Sudan Women Bloc is calling on President Salva Kiir to revoke the appointment of state governors. The group wants three women to be appointed as state governors. For VOA News, Manyang, David Mayar reports from Juba.
At a news conference in Juba today, Amer Manyok Ding, chairperson of the South Sudan Women's Bloc, a group that was among the stakeholders at the peace negotiations, says if President Kiir will not revoke his decree appointing 8 of 10 state governors, he should come up with a clear alternative that meets the required 35% quota for women representation at all levels of government.
We need to continue raising our voices and let them put in consideration that this space, we are not going to leave it like that. They have to call out the rest of the people who have seated in our space, and the women must be there. In case it becomes very difficult for His Excellency the President to reverse the decree for the appointment of the governors, he has to appoint all the deputy governors, all of them female. And he has to, even in that cabinet, in the states, the cabinet should be 50-50. Instead of 35%, let them bring 50% female, 50% male.
Deng says women also want the parties in the unity government to appoint women to the positions of Speaker of the Reconstituted Transitional Legislative Assembly and Chief Justice. The September 2018 revitalized peace deal states that all parties should allocate 35% of their share of positions at all levels of government to women. President Kiir announced the appointment of 8 governors and 3 area administrators 4 days ago. Only one woman, the governor of Western Bahr el Ghazal State, was appointed by the SPLM-IO. The 8 governors and 3 administrators took the oath of office yesterday. But Deng says it is not too late for President Kiir to appoint women to 35% of all government positions.
This is right in the agreement, and it is signed. And the SPLM, the party, are the one who launched the participation of women and women affirmative action 35% in 2016. So we are wondering, why should it be SPLM again to violate it? So SPLM is in question. Why are they violating the right of women, which is already agreed upon?
Caroline Kibos from the South Sudan's Women's Coalition says women leaders and politicians lobbied hard to ensure that women get 35% of gubernatorial positions as part of affirmative action.
We even submitted lists of women we thought could have positions in this current government, but we are just so disappointed that these people did not consider the women voices. Although women have been in these processes throughout the negotiation, the mediation, women have played a role in all these processes. So we wonder why it's only at this point that they are forgetting the women, yet they made commitments to honor the 35%.
Deng says the government's failure to appoint 35% women governors is a clear indication of women being marginalized in South Sudan's government. She says women can't even access government officials.
They have a very serious securities in their gate. When we want to approach them in their offices, we are given an appointment which is not taking place for years. The security personnel from the gate, from their offices, from what? They are the one who start ignoring us. Women are still being marginalized.
Deng says if women are given a chance to lead public offices, they will do better than men in terms of service delivery and maintaining security. Members of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, Women's League, are meeting behind closed doors in Juba to address the matter of women's underrepresentations among state governors. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
Sudanese authorities have detained 22 people who were trying to cross the border to neighboring Libya to join mercenaries. The spokesperson for Sudanese paramilitary group Rapid Support Forces says the government will press charges against individuals found possessing firearms, recruiting children, and crossing the border without documents. For VOA News, Michael Atid reports from Khartoum.
Brigadier Juma says after a long period of monitoring, a joint security operation managed to arrest 122 Sudanese nationals, including 8 children in northern Darfur, along the border with Libya on Sunday. Speaking in Arabic, Juma told reporters in El Janina town of West Darfur that the group were preparing to join the Libyan militia group as mercenaries. He says the detainees are in police custody awaiting trial.
Our joint security forces managed to arrest these groups after long monitoring in Kapkabiya, Serif Umra, Zalinje, and Kulbus. All of them will undergo serious legal procedures.
In February, Rapid Support Forces arrested a group of 243 people in El Fashir and El Janina. All of them were tried in a court of law and some of them were imprisoned. Juma says leaders of such groups could face charges such as recruiting children and crossing the border illegally.
They could be accused of illegally possessing firearms, recruiting children, and inciting violence against the country. And these are crimes that need to have a clear punishment. They will also have to be accused of inciting tribal conflict, as well as looting and robbing.
The Libyan National Accord government in Tripoli, which is recognized by the United Nations, has accused the Sudanese government on many occasions of sending mercenaries to fight alongside the forces of Field Marshal Khalifa Haftar. The Sudanese government has repeatedly denied such allegations. Sudanese advocate and human rights defender Saleh Mahmoud says Sudan does not have laws in place to punish its national illegal migrants who, due to country's dire economic conditions, are looking for a job opportunity outside Sudan. He says some of the detainees may be set free due to lack of evidence.
I don't see any article that would be used against innocent individuals who might have been cheated and carried along to cross the Libyan border. Not all of them were possessing guns or carrying illegal items, and they were not even accused previously of any crimes back in Sudan.
Mahmoud says many civilians in Darfur and Kordofan own guns, which not only hinders government efforts to contain border crossings, but fuels ongoing intercommunal fighting among communities in Sudan. He says there is a need for a massive disarmament in the area.
There is a huge number of guns in the hands of civilians in Darfur and Kordofan. We have not heard about any individual being tried in a court of law for illegally possessing firearms. These guns have been the main cause of fueling tribal conflict among different communities in the region. So they should also pay attention to this issue.
Thousands of illegal immigrants, mostly Africans, choose to cross the Mediterranean Sea towards Europe by way of Libya, a country that has been mired in insecurity and chaos ever since the fall of former leader Muammar al-Gaddafi in 2011. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
From Sudan, we move back to Jonglei State. Some civil servants in Jonglei State say the state government is deducting 10% of their monthly salaries for SPLM party subscription fees. Some of the civil servants say state officials even deduct money from civil servants who are not members of the ruling SPLM party. An official with Jonglei State Ministry of Finance denies his office is cutting salaries. The acting secretary for SPLM party in Jonglei State says the monthly deductions are only mandatory for members of the SPLM who are holding positions in the government. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
25-year-old Awera Kwot works at the Jonglei State Secretariat General as a cleaner. Speaking in her native Dinka language, Akwot says she earns 1,700 South Sudanese pounds a month. She says her salary is so meager she cannot cover her family's needs. Akwot says she is shocked state finance ministry officials can illegally withdraw ruling SPLM party fees from her paycheck.
The SPLM says it has a percentage in our salaries. Even if we try to reject that idea, they insist saying the SPLM liberated the country. The SPLM liberated the country so that you work here. We just give in and says, okay, how are we, the cleaners, connected with the politics of the SPLM?
Akwot says she works other jobs to feed her family, but continues working for the state in hopes that things will get better. Jonglei State employee Ayun Cook says he is in grade 9 of South Sudan's salary scale, and hence 5,000 South Sudanese pounds. Cook says although he is not a registered SPLM party member, official deducted 10% of his monthly salary last week.
They take that amount, but it's not possible for us to be intact because we don't have our party.
Joseph Achang Alies is the former director for resolutions at Jonglei State Government Secretariat General. Speaking by phone from Juba, Alies says he lost his job last year after he and other colleagues protested against what he calls the illegal pay cut by the SPLM party.
It was a mask to every employee working at the secretariat. So some of the employees tried to protest the cut. It was not possible. And therefore, they had to pay. Otherwise, though we failed to understand as employees what was it about, then we had to pay because it was made compulsory.
Aliat says every South Sudanese citizen has a legal right to belong to the party of their choice, and it is illegal to automatically deduct a portion of employees' salaries. Aliat says the practice of deducting fees for the SPLM began in 2018. Duom Kualagir, Director General in the Jonglei State Finance Ministry, admits the SPLM deducts what he calls monthly subscriptions from state employees, but insists the fees are only deducted from party members.
Yeah, there are people paying who are government employees, and they are allegiant to their party. When you are receiving your money, okay, you say this part is for this deduction, but it is not on the payroll, it is not compulsory completely, it is one's own will.
Acting Jonglei State SPLM Party Secretary, Jog Mapeir, says the monthly fees are only obligatory for SPLM office holders in government.
It was agreement made by the party. Even the post holders, their membership is being changed like that. Our post holders have that mandate, they have to pay, because you cannot hold the SPLM position while you don't pay. Yes, but the civil servant, they are not controlled like that. Civil servant can come voluntarily, and if they feel that they don't want to be part of the system, it is up to them.
Mapeir confirms that civil servants have complained to him about the monthly deductions. He says he will ensure that the money is refunded to state employees who are not party members. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a Sudanese activist says sexual abuse is on the rise in Darfur. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
tell me about your favorite person.
My favorite person is my best friend. And we've been best friends since when we're children. And we've grown up. we are in tertiary level and we are still very close and good friends.
My favorite person is my friend, and she's a lady who really knows her worth. She knows her values. She stands for her values and all. She doesn't compromise.
My mom is my favorite person. She inspires me. She gives me the courage to do anything that I want.
Me, I'm a fan of basketball. I play basketball. And the person I like and impresses me too much is LeBron James. I follow him so much and I like his game.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. A Sudanese women activist says sexual violence has been on the rise among internal displaced persons in Darfur. During the COVID-19 related lockdowns, a group calling itself the Strategic Initiative for Women in the Horn of Africa says women in IDP camps in Darfur lost their jobs due to COVID-19 related lockdowns. The group says as a result of that, some women are venturing out in search of a livelihood and have been exposed to sexual abuse by militia and armed men in the area. VOA could not independently verify the claims by the group calling itself Strategic Initiative for Women in the Horn of Africa. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
Hal El-Karib, director at the Strategic Initiative for Women in the Horn of Africa, says the loss of jobs combined with the COVID-19 restrictions on movement have made women in Sudan vulnerable to domestic and sexual violence.
COVID-19 had made things much worse for women. The prevalence of domestic violence has increased significantly. Economic crisis has triggered a lot of hostility towards women, especially women in IDPs and women in the urban poor, who represents majority of the women in Sudan. The fact that they are working women and they used to provide for their families, and at the moment they cannot do that, that puts them at great risks.
El-Karib says data obtained from a hospital in Al-Fashir in North Darfur State show rape cases have increased by 50%, and the occurrence of urinary fistula among women and girls due to gang rape or other sexual violence has increased significantly in recent months.
The women in Darfur is really experiencing huge setbacks in terms of prevalence of sexual violence, you know, and the lack of control of militia. The militarization, that's been happening in Sudan and clearly reflected during and post revolutions, having entry in military forces like the rapid support forces, who are actually showing up everywhere and acting as a state police. That's an embarrassment.
El-Karib says most of the displaced women living in the Abu Shouk, As-Salam, and Rwanda camps and in Tawila town in North Darfur work in the informal sector, selling food or tea, cultivating crops, or building and laying bricks as construction workers. She says COVID-19 changed all that. Now women leave the camps in search of work, exposing them to the violence of militias and armed forces that roam Darfur without accountability or oversight. El-Karib says COVID-19 measures and the heavy presence of armed groups in Darfur has reduced women's access to legal support.
Most of the activists who used to provide legal aid support and were very vocal on behalf of women, they are either being intimidated by the militarized militia, army, and, you know, the neglection of the police and courts, who are, in addition to the lockdown, they are extremely underfunded and under-supported.
Since last week, South Sudan in Focus has repeatedly reached out to the United Nations African Union Peacekeeping Mission in Darfur, or UNAMID, for comment. But the UNAMID spokesperson has not responded. UNAMID is responsible for the protection of civilians in Darfur. Sudan's transitional government recently adopted the United Nations Declaration 1325 and announced a plan on women protection, security and peace building. But Al-Karib says the situation on the ground is only getting worse for women in Darfur.
We need to have a very strong state authority with very clear point of references in Darfur to women rights, human rights. We need to establish transitional justice mechanism. We need to start a very active, serious program of disarmament. I mean serious program. We cannot say a disarmament and demobilization and put the same people who should be disarmed in control of the disarmament program.
Sudan's constitutional document says the government must work seriously to achieve peace in Darfur, South Kordofan and Blue Nile in the first 6 months of the transitional period. Peace talks that began last September and hosted by Juba have yet to produce a final agreement. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
From Washington, we move to Cameroon. Cameroon's displaced Anglophones who fled separatist fighting in western regions to the capital Yaoundé are accusing authorities of harassment. Last week, the government declared a security alert following two explosions in the capital Yaoundé and began raids on houses in Anglophone-majority neighborhoods. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
Many English-speaking Cameroonians in the capital say they have stories of all deals with the police, either in their houses or along the streets. One of them is a 31-year-old journalist who will call Rose to protect her safety. She told VOA that since her national identity card expired a week ago, all attempts to get a new one from the police identification office have failed.
When I approached the police officer, she asked me my profession and I told her I was a journalist. She shouted at me and drove me out of her office because I spoke in English. She told me that we are Anglophones and we are Ambazonians and we ran from our places and we are hiding in Yaoundé.
Rose, who fled fighting in the southwestern town of Mamfe 2 years ago, said she submitted a complaint to the police headquarters in Yaoundé and is still waiting for a reply. 32-year-old Baba Genesis Ngumula escaped fighting in the northwestern town of Bafut 3 years ago. He says he has been arrested twice this week, and both times he was accused of being a separatist fighter. He says he was forced to pay an illegal fee of about $90 to regain his freedom.
They say that we are from Bamenda, that we are even the Amber Boys, that we come and hide in Balade. I was surprised that they locked me up there. Then the next day, they asked me to pay $50,000. I was forced to borrow the money to pay before I go out of the place. We were there more than 25 in the one small cell.
The harassment of English speakers has intensified within the past 2 weeks when Cameroon declared a security alert in Yaoundé. The government said two bombs exploded in the capital city. Nasiri Paul Beya, governor of the central region of Cameroon, where Yaoundé is located, says he has not sent out the police and military to harass anyone. He says the police should instead make sure there is peace in the city.
A series of controls are taking place which have no objective to want to go to a particular quarter or particular areas where people of particular regions live. It is intended for the security of each and every one of us. And when the police and the gendarmes come, they should be able to cooperate.
Beya promised to punish any police officer who abuses the rights of civilians. Activist Hamad Abdurrahman of the Cameroon Rights Center says it is unfortunate that bad treatment is given to English speakers who have escaped from the crisis-prone regions for safety. He says if care is not taken, the English speakers may be radicalized.
Nous sommes là pour promouvoir le vivre ensemble et ce vivre ensemble.
Abdurrahman says Cameroonians should respect each other's language, origin and culture if they want to live in peace and harmony. He says the government should work together with rights groups to encourage all Cameroonians to cultivate tolerance. The United Nations says more than 500,000 English-speaking Cameroonians have fled the northwest and southwest regions since 2016, when separatist groups began fighting for an independent country. A majority of the displaced now live in the French-speaking regions of the Central African state. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
From Yaoundé, we move to neighboring Kenya, where Kenya and a number of other African countries are temporarily banned from making non-essential travels to 31 countries in Europe. The European Union is only allowing countries believed to be safe from coronavirus. As Maureen Odhiambo reports from Nairobi, Kenya's Foreign Affairs Ministry says Kenyans offering essential services in Europe will still be allowed to travel.
Kenya has so far recorded 6,673 COVID-19 positive cases as numbers rise day by day, making it difficult to be among the selected few countries in Africa to have its citizens enter Europe's tourism industry that depends on Europe has expressed its distress on the temporary ban as they had prepared for massive visits. Kelvin Daniels is a director at the Bountiful Safaris based in Kenya. He says most of the businesses they get are from Europe, European countries, and that the temporary ban will affect their business that they had projected to do well once Kenya opens its borders in few days' time.
Having the European news, by the way, that Kenya is not included, it's again a very, very big mess, having in mind that we get groups from places like China, Denmark, UK, Germany, Holland. Yeah, I think those are the most countries that we get guys from. And for the last, like, since we started the company, we've been having crazy numbers of guys coming in. We don't lack, like, over 500 people coming in from outside the country.
The ban has also exempted citizens from the unsafe countries who are already living in Europe. Timothy Kitur is a director at Lima House of Travel Agency. He says the move by European Union to bar citizens from traveling will negatively affect his business.
Our main market would depend on the Europeans and, of course, the Americans, basically all the foreigners who come to Kenya to visit the game parks, to visit the beaches, and especially at this season we have the wild beast migration which is going on at the Maasai Mara and which is usually a very good destination for foreigners.
After a long season in waiting for sporting activities that have been cancelled owing the coronavirus pandemic, Kenyan athletes are yet to be cleared as essential service providers to travel to Europe for Diamond League. Athletic Kenya Head of Youth Affairs Barnabas Korir said that they are having talks with the European Special Envoy to Kenya so they can allow the athletes to participate in the sports.
We have had discussion also with the government, and they want to raise that issue also with the European Union ambassador to see if it is possible to look into that. And I'm sure that within a short time also Kenya will be allowed, but it depends on how Kenya does and controls it is pandemic.
Kenya's neighbor countries, Ethiopia, Uganda, and Rwanda are among African countries allowed to enter Europe. However, Kenya's Foreign Affairs Permanent Secretary Macharia Kamau told VOA that Kenyans who will be considered as essential service providers in Europe will be allowed to travel. Reporting for VOA, I am Maureen Odhiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now take you to Kisumu City in Kenya for some entertainment by Musa Juma singing about New Sudan. We've been listening to Kenyan musician Musa Juma with his song Sudan Mpya. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for joining us this evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers, because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. General Joseph Lacombe.